You're listening to the All Systems Go podcast, the show that teaches you everything you need to know to put your business on autopilot. Learn how to deploy automated marketing and sales systems in your business the right way with your host, the professor of automation himself and founder of Automation Bridge, Chris Davis.
Welcome to the All Systems Go podcast. I'm your host, Chris L. Davis, the founder and chief automation officer of Automation Bridge, the place online to learn about small business marketing and sales automation, where we focus on turning digital marketing professionals into automation service providers. And if you'd like to become one or find out more about what that means, who these amazing new professionals are, you can go to allsystemsgopodcast.com. To find out more, if you're new to the podcast, make sure that you subscribe and share, especially after listening to this episode in its entirety. Get the words out today, Chris. At the time of this recording, the All Systems Go podcast is free to subscribe to. So you can find the show in all main podcasting apps like Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts. You can subscribe on YouTube. Just make sure, again, if this is your first time, listen to this episode in its entirety and subscribe. If you're not already subscribed, what are you waiting on? Come on, join the family of listeners. Every Thursday, new episodes come out. And while you're at it, make sure you leave a 5-star rating and review. It will be greatly appreciated. If you're having any issues at all, leaving a review, we've got you covered. You can go to automationbridge.com/review. While this is playing in the background, leave your 5-star rating and review, and we'll take care of the rest. In this episode, I get to sit down with Paul Sokol, and Paul builds automation and advertises for a living. Builds automation and advertising for a living. That's what he does. He's a thought leader in automated experience design, an author, speaker, promoter. He is the one. You cannot know. Let me put it like this. To know Infusionsoft, I understand it's Keep now, but to know Infusionsoft is to know Paul. He was instrumental in training so many of us at a time where the campaign builder was new, and he would put out weekly or monthly automation recipes. He was the one that really helped me wrap my head around understanding it. So it's good to have him on, officially meet, nerd out a little bit. And there's all types of little automation gems just hidden throughout this podcast. So this is definitely a marketer's marketer podcast. So I hope you enjoy this conversation between Paul and I. Paul, welcome to the podcast. Glad to have you on, man. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me. This is going to be fun. This is going to be a fun one today.
This is a long time coming. Listeners, understand that Paul and I really should have crossed paths many, many moons ago. Somehow we've eluded each other. So you all get the pleasure of having, this is like a brain collision. Brain collision. And what the splat that comes out of it is going to be all types of value. So Paul, give the listeners a little bit about yourself and your background.
Oh man, how do I follow up with that, Chris? All right. So let's see. So, so let's just go to like kind of how we get here. Right. So like I always knew I wanted to be some kind of like a math or engineering type nerd in high school. So I went to college at University of Central Florida, go Knights, for electrical engineering. But my freshman year, I got recruited to sell knives, Cutco. You ever heard of Cutco? World's finest set of cutlery. Well, basically it's direct in-home knife sales, and it's a really good product. It's like a Casper vacuum, or you know, one of those things where it's just a guaranteed forever. They'll always replace it, like, you know, Sears used to do that with their Craftsman tools. You know, you buy it once, they'll always replace it, kind of stuff. I learned how to do direct sales as this engineering nerd in undergrad, and then I ended up also being a sales manager, well, assistant manager, and so helping develop the team and do interviews and train people and motivate people and help them close deals, all that kind of jazz. And then in 2008, when I started grad school, I started a video email company with my buddy Will, who's kind of like, you know, an older brother I never had, and a big mentor, both personally and business-wise. And so that's where we discovered Infusionsoft. So the summer of, you know, like, you know, May-ish, June 2008, got into Infusionsoft and started using it. And so he was kind of the sales guy getting him in the door and, you know, kind of running things. And I was support on the back end, taking care of people, onboarding folks. And then, let's see, when I graduated in 2010, it was really hard to get a job with a master's degree and no experience. And so I ended up switching coasts, working at an incubator for a little bit, ended up being homeless for a little bit, and then getting picked up by Infusionsoft directly to be a success coach because I knew the software very well. You know, I was out on that coast. And so, yeah, through a wild series of miracles, I managed to do 2 interviews, in-person interviews in Arizona. And then, yeah, they basically scooped me off the streets, you know, happy as a clam. I lived in the apartments.
Sounds like a movie, man.
It is. Oh, dude, it is, man. I mean, it was one of those, yeah, it was definitely a rock bottom moment for sure. Like it was no bueno. I mean, that was the moment I really should have been like, hey, dude, you should probably get your mental health like really looked at. But it took about maybe another 10 years before it got real serious. But anyway, worked at Infusionsoft as a success coach. And when people bought the software, my job was to get them going and using the system. And I loved it because it was basically what I was doing at Jive Systems, except instead of helping people get started with video email software, it's get them started with Infusionsoft, which I knew because I literally ran my business with it. In fact, we were in the Double Your Sales Club thing in like 2009 because we literally doubled our sales. And we were one of the first certified marketing automation coaches, the CMAX, the old partner program, like the very first partner program they ever had. Then about 2012 is when the Visual Campaign Builder came out. And when I saw that, I realized that like, I wanted to be like one of the leading guys. And I wanted to be the Dan Kennedy Campaign Builder is what I told my manager, my director, and he had my support through that. And I got an opportunity at the end of 2012 to fix a whole bunch of pre-built campaigns that they were pushing in and kind of managing that. I ended up getting employee of the month for that and driving around the company Camaro for a month. At which point, the day after dropping off that Camaro, I bought a car because there's no way, you know, I was going back to that. Cause I already bought a house by then too. And like, I, you know, still didn't have a car. But then I got pulled into the product team and, I spent the rest of my tenure there, at product. That's where I developed the campaigns of the month. And we released a campaign from like October, 2013 to like 2016. And then I also was invited to write the Infusionsoft cookbook, by a publisher, over in the UK. And then they invited me to turn it into a bunch of video courses the next year, which they're giving up the rights to the courses. So I'll actually be able to just put them online now. I think I'm just going to put them on a YouTube channel so they monetize. Because those royalties were just weak sauce. Like, I was shocked that the videos were more expensive than the book. Overhead was less to produce and the royalties were worse. I'm like, what? Like, you know, but whatever. It was a big learning experience. Yeah, it was my very first book. And then let's see, research and development inside products. So that's really where like I kind of got almost like a PhD in small business success. I was actually on the small business success method team where we were literally doing academic research into what does it mean to be successful as a small business? And so we developed all sorts of distinctions and tools and things I use to this very day. In fact, I'm writing a book called The Business Stack, which is talking about, which comes from the research that I did there. And at the end of the day, you'll love this because you can use automation across the whole thing. But at the end of the day, any business, no matter how big or small, is developing offers. And then there's the customer journey of the marketing, sales, and fulfillment of those offers. Behind the scenes, whether the customer sees it or not, you've got your operations, and then you got your people to run the ops and money to pay it all. And those are the 7 plates any business is spinning, whether you're a 1-person hot dog cart or Disney. The difference is just the scale and the flow through of money and the people involved. And so you can use automation across all of this. Actually, have you ever built any money automation? You ever built any money automation, like for collections or anything like that?
I have. It's actually one of my most lucrative donations. You know, going to collect the money and having some consequence in there works really well, I learned. But a lot of people don't do it.
No, they don't. They don't. In fact, I use the opportunity pipeline for all my businesses. You know, I've got like 6 different pipelines running at once. And there is a financial collections pipeline. So like there's like someone with an outstanding balance, and then they go to pending collections, and the last stage is set to collections. And so pretty much I can try and chase them down a little bit, but at a certain point I say it's not worth it and just pass them off to a collections company, and they send a couple letters and try and hit them. Which I feel bad. I had to once. I've had to do it once, and it was in the pandemic, and the guy just completely ghosted entirely. Like, I'm reasonable. If you talk to me or whatnot, like, I'll work with you or something. Like, but yeah, it was just total. So that's when it's like, all right, well, this is, you know, this is not the first time someone's totally ghosted in the 5 or so years, but at this point now I need to formally make it a process. And yeah, that's where we got a collections person in there, and, you know, formal billing policy. And, but using automation for that stuff.
It. You know, I'll say this. Learning about your journey just even now, I've got another level of respect for you.
Thank you.
To be at rock bottom and still be fighting, still be in the match at least. You know, maybe you were crawling on hands and knees, but you were still in the ring, man, and to bounce back and then have the vision to say, you know what, visual campaign builder, that's me. I want to own that, which also gives me insight. Most people don't know the days of Infusionsoft by Keep. Prior to the campaign builder, they don't know that life.
Yeah, legacy life. It was all bottom up automation. You had to know in your head that this link is supposed to stop this sequence because the point of this campaign is to like sell the thing. Like it was. I mean. That was real. The people that made it work back then, those were, I mean, it was masterful, because it was really hard to do well without it being like robotic or scummy.
To see you master that in its early stages and then come on board and then be the brain behind the campaign build. That's everybody. Like I said, all the listeners, I was telling Paul before we got on, he was like this mythical creature. They're like, hey, he's the mad scientist, almost like not a real person, because he wasn't very visible. He wasn't in videos. You couldn't really see him like I can now. And when I finally saw him, when I got certified, I was like, okay, he is a real person. He's not just made up, but still the legends of his mind and the things that he could do with the campaign builder. Was great times, man. And I'm glad that, again, we're finally connected. And I wanted to give you the floor here and talk about, I think this is one of the more critical pieces of automation, one of the critical areas. And that is that intersection between automation and messaging. I've always known for them to go hand in hand, but I understand in my early days, I may not have made that connection. And maybe I was just doing things because that's what you're supposed to do, right? Like, supposed to send an email when somebody fills out a form, but not really thinking through like the messaging throughout the entire journey. So let's talk about that union for a second between automation and messaging.
Yeah, man. So I guess the thing that I think a lot of people either they forget or they don't really consider when they're writing copy is that you still need to write it like it's going to one person. Like I still need to write it like it's going to you, Chris.
Yeah.
But maybe it's going to a million Chris's in reality. But it can't really necessarily feel like that. Otherwise, it's not going to be effective. It's not going to help the relationship. I like to think of automation as relationships at scale.
Yes.
By intentionally designing like those little interaction points. And so for the messaging, it's almost like the continuity of a movie. If they're wearing a blue jacket in the scene and then the camera, you know, camera B and it's a red jacket, well, something's off.
Yeah. Right?
They messed up. So like bad messaging is like a continuity error. Bad messaging and automation is like a continuity error where it just feels weird. Whereas good messaging really leverages those subtle things. So like, I don't know if you've gotten a whole lot of emails from me, but I'll try and acknowledge the send time. I'll say, good morning, Chris, or good afternoon, Chris. Or if I'm intentionally waiting until the weekend, I'd be like, hey, hope you're having a great weekend, Chris. And then even that, putting somebody's name in there, because psychologically we are trained to pay the most attention to whatever someone says after your name. Yeah. And so sometimes I won't just open the email, hey, first name, because maybe I want them to take some kind of call to action or really lean into something, or maybe I'm asking a favor. And so I'll really dig in, and here's why I want you to come in, Chris. I want you to, you know, host a virtual book tour when it comes out, kind of thing. Like, that kind of stuff. And so for the writing of the messaging, it's really about understanding the context in that moment of time, because, you know, nothing happens in a vacuum. And I think that's the hardest part for a lot of people when writing, is to consider that, like something really common that that I'll see is like with lead magnets. You know, someone will opt in, get a lead magnet, and then the sales emails follow up says, hey, you know, we were talking about it, blah, 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 blah. But they're not making sure that people are actually downloading it. So you can't really even speak to that necessarily. In fact, I'll have a structure where I've been teaching it for years. It's a weekly redeemer timing where, and redeemer meaning to redeem something, like a lead magnet, or just some kind of click, some offer. And so let's say they opt in, you know, send it right away. 3 days later in the morning, if they haven't clicked, you send it again. And then 4 days later in the afternoon, you send a third attempt. And of course, if they click, it pulls them out. The idea is that if they don't click, you can still put them in the sales series, but you have to slightly modify the beginning of those emails. You can't say, hey, hope you enjoyed the whatever lead magnet. And you have to say, hey, thanks for requesting the lead magnet. Because they did at least request it, didn't necessarily download it. And I'm not necessarily going to chide them for not downloading it. At least that's not the brand that I would go for. Certain brands may be a little more, you know, poke at your ego like that. But that's the other thing too, is you don't want to be big brothery. Like, that's, you would never want to be like, hey, I saw that you clicked my shopping cart 23 hours ago, but you didn't buy anything. Would you like to buy something? Like, that's not human. That's not relationship at scale. That's, you ever watched the show Big Mouth? You ever see Big Mouth?
No, I haven't.
Oh man, there's one of the characters out there, he just doesn't get social cues, and he's just awkward, and like, he just doesn't read the room. And like, that's what weak automated messaging will do. It's just like not reading the room. In fact, I had my automation and the messaging saved me recently, because I was adding people to sign up with their cell phone for text notifications when I send out my emails. Which, by the way, do you get my under the hair emails? Have you ever gotten those?
No, I haven't.
You got to go to paulsokol.me right now and completely ignore the weak landing page. That's there intentionally, by the way. I put it up in 2013, and like, it's a filter. Cause like, you know, I only want people that want to be there and, you know, have to read what I've got to say. Cause I really put a lot of effort into those. So that's why I'm doing, hey, I'm going to send you a text message notification. Well, based on how I had the automation set up, there's people having problems, and the automation was automatically following up with them just to make sure everything was okay. And I didn't expect that. I was just building it because I know that that can happen, but I wasn't expecting that. Like, yeah, I don't know, that just, there's going to be that secondary benefit of people really making sure they're getting taken care of. Which is cool. I'd much rather have people replying to automated emails and having to reply back than not, you know, or worse, marketing it as spam or just not paying attention.
Yeah. Let me jump in here. There's a couple of things that come to mind. One is, all of the times that I've been sending reminder emails to people who have requested a lead magnet and haven't downloaded it. You know, Paul, I never thought about trying to send it at different times of the day. Mm-hmm. Right? I literally just sit, you know, wait a day or so. So it's always going out at the time that they opted in. But you caught my attention when you said, you know, I'll send one reminder in the morning and then wait 4 days, send another reminder in the evening. And it's like, why not try? You know, you're giving them multiple opportunities just by sending the email. But mm-hmm. you're right. It may be a time of the day thing. Maybe they opted in at work, got busy, and that time of the day is just always busy. But if you send that reminder in the evening, you've got an opportunity to hit them. That was great. That was just, it was a nugget that you just kind of slipped in.
Hi, man. You want some icing on the gravy? I got this is coming from actually one of my clients, John Hutchinson. Really cool dude. He's a, I don't know if he's ever been a partner, but him and I are both like big Frank Kern fans. So like and we've both done some ontological studies, you know, from the same schools of thought. So like we jive real well together. And he came up with this term called the witching hour. And the idea is it's using the automation to send with respect to when they're active. And so I'll do this a lot after email open goals or link click goals. You know, so let's use the lead magnet thing, you know. Opt in for a lead magnet. Let's say they click to download it at 3 a.m. Well, 23 hours later at 2 a.m., I'm going to send that follow-up email and says, hey, what'd you think of that lead magnet?
Yep.
Because we know, at least for them, the last time they opened an email and clicked it was 3 a.m. So that's statistically the highest likelihood that they're going to do it again. So that's where we're going to show up in their inbox an hour before they were active last time. And then if you make it a really transactional email to where it's, you know, just a black and white left justified, like you actually wrote it because you did actually write it for them because you cared.
Yeah.
It should actually help the relationship. And it'll get people talking, or, you know, they'll just appreciate the reminder and click through, do what they're supposed to. Yeah.
I love it. It's just being intentional with the little details. Like 23 hours seems like a mistake. To the novice marketer, they're like, oh, you meant 24. I could see somebody looking at your automation and be like, oh, he's got 23. He probably meant 24. Why even put 24? Just put one day, right? And it changes everything. That little hour that says, you know what? Since you opened it around this time, when you get here tomorrow, it'll be waiting for you.
Yep.
It'll be right there just waiting for you. I love those considerations. But here's the thing, Paul. All right. Help everybody out. They're listening, and myself included. And it's just like, oh yeah, it's got to be contextual, right? Based on what they previously did. And right when you said that, somebody's brain got overwhelmed and started trying to think of like every single outcome and every single path. And they're like, oh my gosh, how do I do it all? So for you, everything is important, but how do you start to determine what actions are more heavy, you know, are more valuable than others that you want to really personalize around?
So that's a really great question. So I think when it comes to writing a good automated message and the context specific, like how do you consider everything? It's being clear about what are the things we 100% can speak to. And sometimes it's even more important. What are the things we can 100% not mention? Like, what do we not want to absolutely talk about? So like, we'll use the lead magnet example. Let's say they do not click to download it and they're getting the sales series, but they click to the shopping cart to check out from the sales series, right? Well, in those follow-up emails, we have to be careful not to say anything about the fact that they did or did not download the lead magnet because we don't know. Yeah. We do know that they at least opted in for it. We do know that they at least clicked to the cart. So there's something there for them, but you know, we can allude to the lead magnet, but you got to be real careful about kind of stuff like that.
Yeah.
So like if I was writing copy for this, I mean, I know for a fact that anybody listening to this knows who you are, Chris, and that they're listening to this podcast.
Yep.
And most likely, I can't speak to their affinity for heavy metal because that's not what your podcast is. You know, maybe you have an opinion on it or not, but we're talking about automation today. You know, we're not nerding out about bands. So, is that helpful as far as how to write to stuff?
Yeah, it's, you know, because one of the things that I teach people are, you know, identifying your indicators of interest, right? Mm-hmm. Like, what actions do people show that lets you know that either, hey, alert, send something to somebody on the team that this just happened, you know, mm-hmm. either to keep them in the loop or to do action off of it. Or it's just like when people start out, I see them struggle with trying to differentiate from tagging everything. I mean, oh my, I get it. They're free. We don't pay per tag. We're not charged. So I understand it. But they will tag everything. And it's just like, okay, that's fine. The tags are there. It's going to confuse you quicker than it's going to help you, because mm-hmm. it's not like you've got them organized. You're changing naming conventions and you don't even know what's what. So what are some of the best practices that you've used to kind of eliminate that temptation to try to tag or track everything and really stay focused on the main actions that tell you, oh, somebody just did something really important?
Yeah. So, I think it's important to uncollapse the distinction between the customer journey and the operations. So when we talk about tags, that is completely behind the scenes as far as the customer is concerned. They're never going to see that. That's an operational consideration. Absolutely. So that, while related to the customer journey, should be predicated upon the customer journey, not the other way around. Mm. Now, you probably have to go into it with some considerations for the data structure of what you're doing. It's very common to... Well, not very common, but it's not uncommon to actually use a custom field in place of a tag, because it just gives you better functionality, like usability of it. Tags are pretty limited in that they just tell you one bit of information about the relationship. And then the category can give you a second bit of info or some meta info. But like, if you're designing your customer journeys from the tag up, you're doing it the absolute inside out. You need to storyboard out the customer journey. Like, they're gonna come to a website and then they're gonna be offered this ebook, and they're gonna give their name and email, and that's the first asset. And then the next asset they see is the thank you page that says go check it out. And then the third asset they see is the email that comes right away. And then the fourth asset is the actual lead magnet they requested. Have you ever thought about that? How a lead magnet delivery is a four asset mechanism, including the actual lead magnet? You need the form. You need the page with the form. Yep. You need the thank you page. You need an email to deliver it. And then the actual lead magnet.
Yes. All of it, man. And it's all hidden in, you know, I'm gonna create something. I need a free offer. Right. You just committed to the landing page to copy. Mm-hmm. The form and integrating it, mm-hmm. the thank you page, and somehow getting the thank you page URL built in the URL into the form, mm-hmm. you know, so that they're connected. And then the actual thing.
And that's the operation. Yeah, that's the operations of that journey, right? Mm. So what tag do I use? I don't know. Don't use a tag. Just do the web form goal report. If you need a tag for some reason in the future to segment or filter, just make a temporary tag, pull your campaign goal report, temporarily tag the couple of 100,000, whatever people you need, and then do what you need to do. Like, I would never use a tag, you know, back in the day I would, you know, requested ebook, downloaded ebook. Yeah. That is how I would kind of track that behavior with tags. So old me would have maybe made an argument that, yeah, if you're going to use a tag, you would swap them out. Because you do want that granularity. You wouldn't just say request an ebook. You wouldn't just have like an ebook tag. Like, that's useless. You want to know that people either requested it or did they download it.
Yep.
And they should only have one of those tags. But I wouldn't even make a tag for that. There's no need to make a tag. Even if I'm starting another campaign, I don't need to make a tag because I have the start sequence step process now. So we don't even need to make tags anymore. They've been a crutch for years. My opinion is there's a lot of old school legacy Infusionsoft people that were part of the, you know, they were early adopters, part of the ground floor, they got influenced and they relied heavily on tags because that's how they learned. Yeah. And they still rely on that. Do you know the actual danger of too many tags? There's a genuine danger if you have too many tags in your system.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's all databases, right? And there is a tag contact database. So if you have one contact with 10 tags, there is 10 entries on that database table. So if you have an app with, you know, thousands, tens of thousands of tags, a couple million people, that database table literally becomes millions of entries deep. And so it literally takes time for the system to go through it all, and it'll slow it down. And so that's why I used to talk about tag proliferation back in the day. So like, I almost never create tags anymore. The only reason I'll create a tag is usually for third-party integrations that don't support the API goal.
Yep.
So
yep.
like, yep. If I was using like the LearnDash, Mambarium, I would absolutely use the API goal every time. But for something like Zapier, I don't think there's a way to hit an API goal with Zapier. So fine, I'll use a tag. And then I try to use it in such a way that like it can stay on them and provide a little bit of value rather than just being great. Used to trigger. Start from the journey always. Always, you know, it's like a director. A director doesn't like start filming things. They storyboard it out. They figure out we need these four locations. Yeah. Cool, camera unit B, you're going to Jakarta and, you know, South Africa next month because we need, you know, these 30 minutes of fill shots. Cool, main camera unit here. We're going to Utah. And then we're going to have 2 weeks, you know, on the lots in L.A. Like, I don't know. That would be a short movie. But, that's, you know, plan it out. Because then that exposes the true scope of it. And that's something that, like, really... It's frustrating to me sometimes when people don't know what they don't know. And they're like, yeah, just put up a, you know, just put up a landing page and, you know, we'll give them the lead magnet. I'm like, do you know how to build a landing page?
Yeah.
Do you know how to write copy for a landing page? Operationally, do you know what to do if the website's slow? Right. What about the digital tracking? Like, there's just so many things that people don't know they don't know. And it's challenging because it'll cause people to undervalue what you've got and, like, really not get it. And so that's why I like to plan everything out. And when we're doing a journey, anything, whether it's automation or advertising, we plan it out and we show it's like, you want to build a four-story mansion? Cool. Here's the giant set of blueprints you wanted. Oh, that's too big for you. This is what you wanted. You can't afford a four-story mansion. You can only afford to build a one-story family home. Okay, cool. Well, let's build the guest house from the mansion as your one-story family home, you know?
Yeah. Man, no, that's great. I find that most of the times where you find an account that's gone overboard, not just with tags, because custom fields are in there too. They're just all over the place. Uh-huh. It is. They did not start with the customer journey and let the customer journey dictate the path, you know, the requirements and all of that. You said you didn't use tags, so and I think you said you use goals instead. So for you, you're using goals between sequences to move people along and track. So you're running like goal reporting if you ever need to know how many contacts meet a particular criteria.
Yeah, that's the whole point of it. I mean, that's also another thing too. I see a lot of people use tags as a crutch for not learning how to use the system properly. You know, like when all you have is a hammer, every problem's a nail kind of thing. Like the campaign reporting is very robust. And so if you know how to use it, you should be able to get any data you want. And so, so when I see a bunch of tagging and stuff like that, that's usually a symptom of like, they never got training on how to report properly.
Yep.
In fact, I was on a call with one of my buddies in Panama the other day, and it was the same thing. He was using the campaign reporting widget, and he had to build the campaign almost like a ladder based on how the widget works, because it only looks at starting and ending goals. And I'm like, well, yeah, that'll function, but let's actually make this like a cohesive journey. And then I'd help him build a better dashboard, just showing him how to, you know, do saved goal reports and things like that. Because that was one of those things, once they buy, they're getting added to some forum. And so he wanted to be able to see who bought but wasn't yet added. And so that was an example of where we used a tag that said, you know, pending registration. And then as soon as the internal form is filled out with their username and password,
Yeah.
It removes the tag and sends them their login info. So like, that's a good use case for a tag,
very
you know,
good.
Usually use tags for if I really, really need to control something very precisely, that's usually where tags will have to come into play. Usually I have to set some kind of a timer tag that's connected to some goal, you know, some tag goal.
No, that's
is this good? Are we having fun?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay.
But the reason why this is good is because we can talk about these things, but look at how much goes into it. Something as simple as a tag, you know, and I tell people all the time, a tag is it could be a representative. So that tag, if used correctly, can represent a combination of actions and inactions, mm-hmm. all built in. Or it could just be something that you thought of in the moment's time and just decided to apply it. It made sense today, but doesn't make sense tomorrow. And you've got a whole library of those, you know,
And
it starts to speak on this. What I would say is this automated marketing minefield, right? Where the knob it's like you, somebody like us who are mature, you know, when we weren't, you just go at it like I'm coming success. And it's like, boom, you're losing limbs. And before you know, you're just like, I'm done with it. Then you get like the little detector, right? We're a little more safe. Okay, wait a minute. I know I can send this email to everybody accidentally. Let me figure out how to do some safe search, some segmentation, things of that nature. So you got the little landmine detector, and then it gets to the point where you're like, oh, I could see how the dirt is raised a bit. There's a mine there. Don't need the detector. And you're just kind of sprinting through, right? Like, I feel like we've sprinted through the landmine after losing so many limbs figuratively. But you see it now when you go into an account and you see tags all over the place, you're like, yep, that was one landmine. You know, I'll see custom fields that are repetitive.
Oh, yeah.
It just didn't have a consistent naming convention. And Paul, these are all of the things that prevent people from being successful. Oh. And then they blame the tool. They get mad that automation doesn't work. And it's not about the tool. It's not about any of that. It's about them literally stepping back and architecting the customer journey and understanding from there how to build the CRM, how to structure the data, right, in the CRM to aid that journey. I think it's critical. And one of the things I want to mention before we go is we've been talking about email. But it's becoming even more important with chatbots because that's becoming more of a norm that people are engaging with and using, especially on social media. It provides a level of convenience. And it's like, well, look, the same rules apply. Do they not? Chatbots?
They absolutely do. In fact, they're even more discerning at that point. I remember one time. I think it was like 2018 when chatbots were first starting to blow up. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to go ahead and try and sell this little Gmail course that I made, you know, on how to set up your inbox to like automatically sort itself. So like, I took an old email an email promo and that actually got sales. And I'm like, okay, I'm just going to kind of convert this to a chatbot, whatnot. And so it didn't translate over well because it was like, you know, hey, interested in learning about this thing? Yeah, okay. And then when they hit yes, it just kind of hit with the sales pitch. And it was a very one-sided thing. And one guy was actually getting real pissed at it. It was okay. He wasn't my target audience anyway. The guy was, but yeah, it was just interesting. So like with chatbots, you really gotta, again, it's about the experience. So I'll give you an example with my band. I'm in a band. We got a show on Friday the 13th up in Black Sky Brewing in Colorado, in Denver, and we just printed CDs. And so, we've got fans all over the world, and so we're like, posting pictures of the CDs, and if you're interested, go ahead and, leave a thumbs up in the comment. We'll send you information on how to get a copy. Yeah. And we've got that connected to a comment guard in ManyChat, so if somebody thumbs up it. And I ripped and replaced the same flow that I used from when we first got the art and we said, who wants to get on the waiting list? We had some mock-ups made up and they could choose to see that before giving their email. So I literally just ripped that off the shelf and I was like, cool, before you give us your email, you want to see some mock-ups? And then we collected a couple of emails. And then inside the band's Gmail that we all use, I turned on the templates feature and I wrote an email template that basically says, here's how much it is and give us your address and we'll tell you how much the shipping is. Yeah. Cause like in some cases there's a fan out in Sweden and it's going to cost the CD is 15 US. It's going to cost more than that to ship them. You have to ship it to them. So like,
right.
Or there's like this poor fan in like, I think Croatia or like one of those really esoteric European countries. And the shipping is like, it'd be like $150 just for like a CD, like $150 American. And it's like, man,
oh my goodness.
Here's a digital copy, bro, I guess. But, but yeah, the messaging is really important, especially for audiences like that, like a heavy metal crowd who they're not particularly technical and they're actually really sensitive to bad messaging and bad automation. You'll get flamed real hard. Peanut gallery effect is what we call it. When you start, you know, people flaming your comments or whatnot, that just means that your audience and the message market match was just not. So yeah, chatbots real important because it's the back and forth and you really got to design that. And the other thing you got to do is build your list as well.
Yes.
So you still want to collect emails because you don't own your chatbot list. You can be light switched at any time, just like your Facebook page. So it's called the list booster trademark, I think is what I would put in my little plans back in the day where, cool, we'll send you the lead magnet. You know, should we send it to you via email? And if they say yes, then we collect their email. If they say no, it's like, okay, here it is. And then if you can even get them on a mobile number too and start text messaging, that's huge. When Damon John is, he does really good with that. I signed up for his chatbot and then gave him my phone number. And then every once in a while I get a text message that points me to a Facebook message thread on a new piece of content that he's released. So it's, I mean, it's real easy to go multi-channel these days, but the messaging is even more important.
Yeah, and I think that one of the things people have to understand is that you may be using a different channel, but the overall messaging is pretty much the same, right? Like, just because the channel is different doesn't mean you have to rewrite that email. Maybe you just extract a little bit out of it and put it in the SMS because maybe the email's too long. SMS has character limits. You don't want it chopping up, you know. But at the end of the day, it doesn't matter the channel. You know, like the approach to messaging is the same. So when I look at a chatbot and, you know, log into ManyChat, ManyChat was on the Mike, the founder was on a few weeks ago and it's the visual builder. It looks no, to me, it just triggers the same brain space. Okay. Time to map out logically.
Yeah.
What I need to happen before I go and start building. I cringe every time I see somebody just jump into an app and literally start typing and start moving. It's like, it's a disaster waiting to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. No, so that's, you know, that's the blessing and the curse of a tool like that. Like Frank Kern said, it's a whiteboard that spits out money and it is if you know how to use it, otherwise it's going to spit out pain and heartache.
Yeah. And I know you've seen your fair share being in success, helping the, what was it called again?
We were Success Coach.
Yeah, Success Coach. You've seen so many eras, not just with Infusionsoft though, but just business, period. So, you know, you see enough, Paul, and what happens is you could be the most cold-hearted individual in the world and you'll still feel a certain way for people who just can't figure it out. Mm-hmm. You can look at some of these campaigns and be like, you know what? I think I see what you were trying to do. It just doesn't work like that. Mm-hmm. Not how it works. Let me help you out and figure out the landscape. So if anything, I hope the podcast today is comforting to you all who have been struggling trying to master automation. You may be the one for it, and hopefully what we've said today helped, but you also may not. That's okay. That's okay. Literally, it's okay to ask for help for somebody who does this stuff.
Because actually, that's a really, really good point, Chris, because there's a big difference between like the strategies and the tactics, like, you know, the vision and the implementation. So like if you're not a technical person, but you've got the vision. If you know that, like, listen, I want there to be like a landing page because I've got this ebook I want to give away, and like I know that I want to follow up with some of you, and you know the journey you want to create, that's all you need. Again, that's almost like a director being like, hey, listen, I need this shark to jump out of the water and onto the boat. And the crew of Jaws is like, what are you talking about, 1974 Spielberg? And he's like, I need a shark to jump out of the water onto the boat. That's a shot I need.
Yeah.
So then it's up to his nerds to figure that out. So same kind of thing. If it's like, I want this lead magnet thing and this email drip, great. Go find someone like, you know, myself, like Chris. Like, there's all sorts of people in the community that can actually help you implement.
Yeah.
Because it is not for everybody. Everybody should not be a mechanic. Not everybody needs to become a mechanic just to learn how to drive the car. And in fact, that's an important distinction. I try to really only teach people what they need to know. So if we built like an internal form, like that's all I'm going to teach them. I'm not going to talk about opportunities unless they're using opportunities, and then we've got to teach them on that. But, you know, maybe we're not going to teach them on the e-commerce because they're not using that. So, or maybe we only talk about products because they're just doing the revenue forecast, and that's it.
Tell me this, Paul. You mentioned something prior before we head out. You said you run multiple pipelines.
Yeah.
Are you meaning within one account or? Yeah, because it's been a while. I will admit it's been a while. But to my last recollection, I thought it was one pipeline per account.
It is.
So now you can do. But you do multiple with that one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I still have one master win and loss stage, but I have, you know, my main sales stages in there. And then I have stages to track fulfillment. I have sales stages to track the acquisition of shows for polling events. I have sales stages to track Keep Children Rockin' donations.
Yeah.
Which I can't believe I haven't talked about that. I have a nonprofit that provides music equipment repairs and to local schools. And so I use Infusionsoft to track those. The acquisition of those schools to, you know, have conversations with teachers and get the list of stuff they need and buy them the stuff. Just recently we bought 25 ukuleles for a school out here in Phoenix. And then, we bought a whole PA system for a school in Kingman cause they had an old like speakers built into the wall kind of thing.
Wow.
And rather than fix it, the partners and I were just looking at them cause they're technical sound guys too. They're like, we're just going to buy them some portable speakers and a mixer. You know, that's all they needed. So I use Keep for that, for tracking that too. And then I also have that pipeline I was telling you about, the financial collections.
Yep.
And then there is also, I also use the pipeline to track sponsors for the Dead of Winter Fest, which is the annual heavy metal festival to generate donations for Keep Children Rockin'.
Wow.
That's like five or six pipelines all in one. And then there's just one master win-loss stage.
Right.
And then the win-loss reasons are broken down by the brand. So there's like, you know, the PLS Consulting win-loss reasons, the Keep Children Rockin' win-loss reasons, the appalling event reasons. And of course, with Keep Grow and Pro and Max, you now do actually have distinct separate pipelines.
Yeah.
Which is new. So.
Yeah, that is new. Thanks for dropping that on me. I was wondering about it. I hadn't logged in so long.
Yeah.
So that's welcome, because everything to me, Paul, everything is a pipeline. Everything is a pipeline. You know, like
everything's a process, you know, man.
That's what it is, right? And the stages become steps in the process. Just like I think in pipelines, I can't not do it that way. So to have a platform that aids that way of thinking and automates right along with you, it just makes you that much better, man. It really does.
Do you have a podcast guest pipeline?
I do.
That's awesome, dude. Yeah,
I absolutely do. It is the I can't Paul I'm
could
I'm
you get a little man, could you do I anything without it if you didn't have the pipeline? What would you do?
I probably wouldn't have a podcast, man.
That's about the answer. I can't imagine, you know, we're a 2-person boutique agency over here. It's just me and Brina. And like, you know, we've sold over, you know, 300 grand worth of services in the, you know, past 5 or so years. And that's just me. If I didn't have a pipeline, there's no way I'd ever be able to. I think about like, if I knew what I knew now about pipelines when I was selling knives, I'd probably be a career sales professional. I'd probably be over $1 million in sales, making half 50% commission on that. With the exception of the first 50 grand of that sales. But like, yeah.
Right. Yes, man. I remember when I discovered them, because you had to learn them when I was getting certified for Infusionsoft. And then I actually didn't find out or pay attention to them till later, because the stage stuff always kind of confused me. Like, okay, you change the stage, what's happening? Because I couldn't see it. And then when I had to, I was at Active Campaign as the director of education. I had to learn pipelines because I had to teach on it. Uh-huh. And then once I learned what a pipeline was, I was like, wait a minute, this can be used for anything. And it just, my mind blew. And now, like I said, I cannot, there a podcast pipeline, anybody that sells high ticket services that require a call before enrolling, or
any assisted sale needs a pipeline. Dude, any assisted sale.
Period. Are you serious? How could you not use a
assuming
pipeline?
Assuming if the price magnitude is hundreds of dollars or more and it's an assisted sale, you need a pipeline.
Yep.
You know, if it's an unassisted sale, like a cup of coffee or maybe something for 10, 20 bucks a store, you don't need a pipeline.
Right.
But yeah, anything that's, you know, 100 bucks or more, you're wheeling a deal. And you set up a pipeline for that, man.
Absolutely.
That's my favorite thing in the whole world, by the way, is pipelines, because I come from direct sales.
We're aligned. We are 100% aligned there. Oh, yeah. Man, I love them.
Man, how has it been almost a decade since, like, man.
I don't know, man. I don't know. This is great.
We should do this more.
We should do a follow-up just about the various pipelines you and I have built.
Dude. All right, let's go.
I think we got our next podcast. With that being said, let me say this, Paul. Thank you, man, for jumping on to the podcast. This has been great. Great to meet you. Great to see your brain. Great to connect with it in front of everybody for the first time. Where? I know people are like, okay, well, if we need to hire somebody like you, how do we find these people? How can somebody connect with you and find out more about you?
Yeah. So if I'm all over Facebook and LinkedIn. So my page on facebook.com/underthehair. And then on LinkedIn, just Paul, S-O-K-O-L. And that's me. And then if you go to paulsokol.me, again, there's going to be a very unimpressive landing page. And the whole point is to weed out people that aren't interested in serious marketing and whatnot. And I send that email. The goal is to do it monthly, but sometimes it'll be a couple months before I have anything valuable to say. So I'm not just going to send it. Like the last one I sent was talking about how I use automation for my mentoring program. In fact, if you're interested in that, let me know, Chris. And after you sign up, just tell me, I'll push that out to you.
Because
it's all using internal forms. You might even be able to do something like that for your podcast follow-up, now that I think about it. Because it's an internal form that takes like an introduction block and then two work items. And then, you know, what's the date and time for the next call? In your case, it would probably be like, thanks for being on the podcast, customized paragraph, and then, you know, maybe a blurb about the production or something.
Yep, absolutely, man. All right, well, great. We'll have those links in the show note. Again, my friend, thank you for coming on to the podcast, man. Enjoy recording this one. I know our listeners will enjoy it as well. And already looking forward to part two, man.
Woo! Let's do it.
So, all right, Paul. Thank you for listening to this episode. I hope it was eye-opening. This wasn't for the beginner, right? This is for that marketer who has some nicks and bruises, some scars from the marketing automation minefield. But it was just so refreshing to hear Paul talk about tags and how they don't precede the customer journey. Right. And talk about how everything is a pipeline and how to craft the right messaging. These are all critical ingredients to a automated customer journey that converts. OK, so if you found this helpful and if you know somebody who's looking forward to leveraging Infusionsoft or Keep by Infusionsoft or Infusionsoft by Keep, if they're trying to leverage their CRM and manage their pipeline more effectively, share this episode with them. And while you're at it, if you were that first time listener I mentioned at the beginning, now is the time for you to subscribe. Okay. And leave your 5-star rating and review. I want to say thank you in advance for that. Here at Automation Bridge, we're dedicated to training digital marketing professionals to become automation service providers. Small businesses, they need help. They're in dire need of somebody who can understand technology, the marketing technology, and the strategies for marketing and growing a business, put those together to deploy automated marketing and sales systems for their rapid growth. Small businesses need that. If that is you, this is the podcast for you. So what we've done is we've made it easy for you to get access to everything that you need. If you go to allsystemsgopodcast.com, you'll be able to access the latest episodes and, more importantly, our Amplify My Automation package. And it's geared to put automated marketing and sales systems in your business over the next 6 months. Okay. We also have a free Facebook group. You can request to be a guest on the podcast, or you can refer someone. Your referrals are greatly appreciated. All right. And any resource or training mentioned on the podcast, one URL to remember gets you access to it all. And that's allsystemsgopodcast.com. Thank you for taking the time to listen to this episode. And until next time, I see you online. Automate responsibly, my friends.